Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness, about the evolution of our culture and the values that we feel are changing and shifting on a planet in chaos. And as always, we need to look to nature as models for our human society, our technologies, and for our evolutionary process. And we've ignored that. We've ignored nature. We've stamped it out. We've paved it over. And nature has been the answer to our next level of our cooperation, living together, and our technological evolution. So tonight I'll be talking to Valerie Solheim about bees and really what they have to offer. Valerie, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
Do you want to give a little background? Well, we can talk about like the bee problem, but then why don't you just set the groundwork about what is the bee situation? Because you hear so many things that the bees are dying, and of course, without bees, we wouldn't have any fertilization of our products or flowers. And so why don't you give us a background on bees, their value, and what's happening?
Well, since we started genetically modifying our food, that's where a lot of the news, that's where you're hearing a lot of the news on genetically modified foods and on seeds that are impregnated genetically also with pesticides that will kill anything that would harm the plant, which also, of course, will harm the insects that pollinate and feed off that plant and the soil. But one thing that, and remember, there are the chemicals, there's pollution, there's urbanization that knocks out natural habitats. One thing that we forget is that in the 1850s, we started, you know, beekeepers started modifying the bee when we learned about genetics and how we could change the bee behavior. And we went from looking at the bee as a superorganism, and not bee, as the beehive as a superorganism, because there's a single bee will die in nature. A single bee is in chaos. It is the hive that is the superorganism. And that's why bees have been around for 200 million years with very, very little evolution.
But can you talk about what bees do, why they're so valuable for our produce, for
We look at their value as relative to our material world. Yes, in fact, they're pollinators. There are other pollinators. Wasps are better pollinators than bees. Solitary bees are better pollinators than honeybees. There are many, many insects that are pollinators, but the bee also happens to offer a lot of healing properties. So what they're saying is, like, you know, 70% of our food is pollinated, and without that, you will get, you can get the food. Like the Chinese now hand pollinate. Vanilla is a bean that comes from an orchid, and it is the second most expensive extract that we have in the market. And what's interesting about the vanilla bean is that the vanilla bean grows native to Mexico. It's pollinated specifically by the Melipona bee. And when they took it out of Mexico, the vanilla bean, they're hand pollinating it. And so why I'm bringing this up is look at the cost. Where we took it from the native pollinators, so there is an abundance, we took it to countries where it has to be hand pollinated. And the cost of it has just skyrocketed. And that's what will happen to our food. We won't be without it. It's just going to be at prices that are exorbitant and then out of the reach of most people.
Right. Okay. So, right. So, I mean, bees are valuable in all sorts of areas, but you made some very important discoveries. Do you want to talk a little bit about your work in particular?
What I had using the tools made by Slim Sperling and Bill Reed, the rings initially, what I found was that in combining the sacred cubit ring with a CD that I made recording inside the hive, that I was able to transmit subtle energies to the hive in order to maintain the hive at very high levels of coherency. Now, to back up a little bit of this, bees in nature will locate their hives over high energy zones. These zones for humans are called geopathic stress zones. So
they're stressful for humans, these zones, but they're okay for bees? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they're very stressful for humans until you entrain to the higher frequencies. If you're not entrained to higher frequencies, meaning tuning in and clearing your system, you can't take it. It's in some areas, they've done studies in Europe mostly on these areas, and they find high levels of cancer in geopathic stress zones, and that's because the people that live there are not connecting to the frequency zones, and so it's very disturbing to them.
But how do you attune to the higher frequencies? How do you do that?
Pardon me?
How would someone attune to the higher frequencies?
There's an entrainment process, basically, and you listen to them over time. One of the CDs I have is called Bees Healing Bees and Beings, and it seems to work on the organs, but if your body has an energetic block in it, you will feel a detox effect, which would be a headache, nausea, anxiety. And let's just say if you're unconscious of this, you will maintain that cycle of feeling those discomforts, and they will get bigger and bigger. If you're conscious of it, you'll become aware of blocks in your system, and you will then work with a therapist or yourself going in and releasing those blocks. In this discussion right here, I had with Valerie Hunt, who wrote The Infinite Mind. She was a professor at UCLA.
Yes, how is Valerie doing? She's an amazing person, yes.
She is an incredible person, and I'll tell you, when we spoke, I couldn't write fast enough with everything she had to tell me.
Was she feeling okay? I know she was like, she was old. I mean, she's ancient.
I spoke to her 2 years ago, she was 91 years old, and she was sharp as a tack.
She is still. Anyway, what did Valerie particularly say to you? Because Valerie created measurements for the auric, the field, the energetic fields. I mean, she created
And she defined within those fields what all the imbalances in the body were.
Right.
What she told me, I sent her my research, and she called me and said I was right on. She said that the frequency levels are going right into the energetic body, which is the connective tissues and fascia, and running through the system. And when they run into blocks, they'll create discomfort, and then they'll go through them. You know, you'll work through them if that's your choice. And that this is a very efficient system. At that point, I was very early on in my work, so I didn't have more to offer at that time.
Wait, is the system you're talking about the beehive effect that you created? Is that what you're calling it?
I can't say I created it. Let's just say I remembered it. You know what I mean? Because the beehive effect, the bees were celebrated, the hive was celebrated 6,000 years before Christianity. And if you look through the different expressions of that celebration from the Mayans to the Mediterranean, wherever bees were native, they were not native to North America, the honeybee, they were celebrated in a similar way. The priests or guides on the human level wanted to merge with the spirit of the bee. It was not about the pollen and the honey and all this. That was secondary. They wanted to merge with the bee, which would take entrainment and mind expansion. And it's absolutely beautiful.
What would that do to merge with the spirit of the bee? What would that do for the shaman?
When you merge with the spirit of the bee, what it does, it's an expanded mind, and it informs you. I'll have to say the bee was always considered an intermediary between God and man. Mm. And I've had experiences where the bee has taken me into expanded mind. And what they do is they show me what is possible. That's all I can say, because it shows me what is possible on a universal level, and it shows me what's possible. Well, you know, once you get into expanded state, you are all one, so it's not about me anyway.
But how did you get to merge with the bee like that?
It was not anything that I was aware of. What was happening is I was just doing, when I got, my objective initially was only about working with the beehives through subtle energy frequencies to sustain the hive without any kind of medication. That was my only goal. And while I was sitting on a class on all the medications you're supposed to use on the bees, I kept hearing in my head, frequencies, frequencies, frequencies. And I said, no, I'm not going to sit out there and do Reich, you know, frequencies on my hives. I have no idea what you're talking about, no frequencies. And in 4 days, I was on a plane to Hawaii to record the bees inside the hive, because at that time, Hawaii had the healthiest and isolated bees there. And when I brought them back, we downloaded them, put them on, burned them onto a CD, and we just sat there listening to them. And all of a sudden, I started feeling all this energy in my body moving around, and the first thing I noticed that my allergies were gone. And so...
Wait, I missed something there. So you're saying you recorded the bees...
In the hive.
Sound, in the hive, like their buzzing sound? Is
yes.
that it?
Yes.
And you played it back, and your allergies were gone.
I played it back, and I felt like a balloon was blowing up in my body, and then I noticed that my allergies were gone. And
so what happened then energetically, if you can explain that?
Energetically... I'll have to say that I was open. I knew nothing. I was just listening to it, that's all. And what happened is it takes your frequency levels to a higher threshold so that particles of a denser matter do not glom onto you. They drop out.
Wait, so I think I'm finally getting what you're saying. You're saying, in a sense, that bees are these animals, let's say, that actually exude higher vibration. And when we start to tune to that higher vibration, we start to change our own energetic field. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Bees are a superorganism. Their hives are cavernous, so they are in harmonic resonance with earth frequencies at a very high level. All insects that are colony insects choose geopathic stress zones to place their colonies. Ladybugs, wasps, ants, bees. Oh,
okay, so you're also saying, I think, in this kind of new paradigm way, that the bee, the hive itself is the organism. And
yes.
The bees themselves are just pieces of the superorganism. So we really
absolutely.
So we can't look at an individual bee and say that's separate from the whole animal or whatever. It's not.
No, it's like
animal.
We could sit down and talk about a liver,
right.
Which is meaningless.
Right. So I'm getting those two different things just by what you're saying. So. And I think that's sort of a new paradigm for understanding nature and ourselves as a morphogenetic resonant species. Is
absolutely.
That we are a superorganism called humanity.
Yeah, that's right. And bees' job is to right now is to unbind us.
What do you mean?
A bee kinesthetically, and this is science now, kinesthetically will buzz around buds on plants, and their frequency of buzz and the frequency of the bud couple, and the plant knows it's time to bloom. That's the same experience with us. When we're ready, we can take on entrainment at that frequency level and become unbound.
Wait. I have to catch up with that. So,
okay.
How do we do that? Okay. So I get the fact that the bees could energetically provoke a flower to bloom because of the frequency they're giving off. But now, what is it about humans then?
What we have is at their frequency, bees, when you record the bees inside the hive, you're recording the frequency of coherency.
But when you say the frequency of coherency, in a sense that there's only relative coherency. I mean, there's many levels. I mean, that's one level. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the frequency.
Okay. What is happening in a high frequency zone is you have the higher the frequency, the lighter the body. The lighter the body, the more you go towards anti-gravity, and the more you go towards anti-gravity, that's a scientific term for spirit.
Oh, but the more coherent you are, I see. So the higher, so if you're energetically vibrating at a higher frequency or in a higher frequency zone, you have to have more coherency within that zone, right, to maintain the vibration.
Yes, and the thing that I love about this is that, you know, I go to all the workshops and I do all the studies and I've done all sorts of things with everybody. It's kind of like everybody else. We're all searching. And we come home and for maybe a week, maybe a day, you know, we can maintain something. This is sustainable.
What do you mean? What is sustainable?
This energy field is sustainable, and it's a gift to us. The bees are one of the most generous of all organisms. In everything they make is a healing factor for us. Their frequency level that they're giving is entrainable. We did EEGs with listening to different CDs, and what was astonishing, one person had pretty bad ADD, another person was schizophrenic, and then there was myself. And in all three cases, after we did 10-minute baseline with a QEEG, a quantum electromagnetic frequency device, and in all three cases, it normalized the brain frequencies, meaning it released you to do what you had to do, both with a clear mind and focus and in a relaxed state. And in my case, with the woman with schizophrenia, it was interesting because she said, no, today was a bad day because her voices were very active. And I asked her if it would be possible if we could do it anyway, because it would be a good day for us. And she led us, and when she was done, we asked, what do you feel now? And she goes, I feel very relaxed. Mm-hmm. And the man that was doing this has a PhD in neurophysiology, and he said he's never seen anything like this. I sent you my brain frequencies.
Oh, yeah, I saw
and
that.
What happened to me after the 10-minute baseline, we turned on the spring healing BCD, and instantaneously I went into expanded mind state and had one of the most powerful, most powerful experiences that I've ever had with the bees as a bee.
Wait, but before we get there, I just want to establish, are all bees the same? I mean, as far as vibrating at a frequency, or is there particular bees that are different than other bees?
All bees do not vibrate at the same high frequency, only because the honeybee is a colony bee. Not most bees are not; they're solitary bees, and so they don't form colonies. And it's the colony and the way they live in a cavernous structure that keeps the resonant vibration going and perpetually in motion, which is an important factor in the gravity, in the frequency field, is perpetual motion.
I don't quite see how that happens.
How the bees are in perpetual motion?
Yeah.
Don't hibernate. For example, in winter, they've always got to be vibrating their thoracic muscles to maintain a heat in the hive. Hive temperature is vital to the vitality of the bees, to keep off pests and disease, and to maintain a heat for the eggs, for the honey, and for the queen. And so throughout the winter, whatever temperature is outside, they've got to keep a temperature inside that ranges from the lowest maybe 50 degrees up to 95 degrees. They must always be vibrating.
Right, I see. So they're always in motion. Do they ever sleep, bees?
They find bees that aren't as active as other bees. They'll kind of take a break, but they're in motion.
Okay, so you went into a particular hive and recorded the sounds of these bees, right?
Yes.
But there was a particular hive that you raised yourself?
First two hives were hives in Hawaii that were organically raised. And I chose Hawaii because in the literature it said that the bees there were the healthiest because of their isolation and the variety of food available to them. That's no longer true, but it was then.
I see, because of their isolation.
Since then, the other two CDs I have were taken from my hives that had been in entrainment with the tools and the CD for over 2 years.
So you're really talking about the way bees affect us. The thing that there's so many failed hives, and you're saying that that's because of the GMO situation?
It's the GMO, it's the genetic modification of the queen bee, the constant modification. We like her like a milk cow. We want her to lay so many eggs. We want her to be gentle. We want her to be non-swarming. We breed her for all these factors that are copacetic with what we want as opposed to what is best for the hive. We've taken an individual from the hive and made it a queen as opposed to looking at the whole hive as a superorganism.
Wait, let me see if I get that. So, talk about the queen a little more, because that whole understanding of the queen itself. Can you say some of that again?
Yeah, the queen is the central nervous system, so to speak, to the hive. You can take the queen out of the hive and take her many, many miles away, and the hive will continue to operate, function as if she's there. And if at 50 miles away you kill the queen, the hive breaks down. That's how connected they are with her.
What does the queen do, though? What is her
The queen
function?
Lays eggs, basically. She regulates the hive. She can lay up to 3,000 eggs a day. She puts out a pheromone that is a smell that will indicate what's going on in the hive, and the vitality of the hive is measured by her vitality. She doesn't eat on her own. She has to be fed always. She's cleaned and fed. But she's not the ruler. It's actually the nurse bees, the youngest bees, intending the hive will notice if the queen is getting too old and not laying enough or weak, if her pheromones are weak. They will indicate to the hive that the queen needs to be replaced. So there's
what happens to the old queen?
Well, the old queen, what will happen in the hive is that the nurse bees will create, using the larvae that the queen obviously the queen is laying the eggs she lays. With those eggs, they'll start feeding maybe 5 or 6 of those eggs royal jelly. They'll feed them extra special food the entire time that queen is in the cell, and so it'll be born a queen as opposed to a worker bee. And what will happen is the old queen will have to fight with these new queens as they emerge, and then the new queen will take over.
What do you mean, fight to the death with these old queens?
Yes.
And then
if the hive is particularly large in the spring, the old queen will take half of the hive and fly to a new location and start a new hive.
Okay. Well, so, but you're also saying, as far as the queen, she just doesn't do these mechanical types of biological kind of things, but she's an electromagnetic pulse to kind of keep the vibration of the hive.
Yes, she is the pulse, but they're all interdependent.
But the queen itself is the heartbeat of that. She's the one that her vitality.
If you take the queen out and kill her, the hive breaks down completely.
Because of the electromagnetic resonance that the queen carries. But you're also saying there's this great intelligence that somehow, like if those nursing bees just know what to do, how do they know the frequency is not where it should be? I mean, there's this other level of consciousness that seems to be going on in the hive, and where's that all coming from?
Well, I think what is interesting here is, now we can go back to frequencies, is that the higher the organism is in terms of coherency, the more effortless the field of information is.
Wow. Right. The easier it flows, yes.
The easier it flows, the more efficient, the more coherent, the less friction. Everything in there is moving in spirit. And this is with even a hive that is not held in a... Well, and this also has to do with the level of the hive. You can have hives that are very weak, and they'll still have an effect, but they won't be able to protect themselves. And in the 5 years I've been a beekeeper, I've never lost a hive to disease, to pesticides, to winter. The bees, and I live at 7,200 feet, so they have to go through quite a lot here for me.
Have you ever lost a hive?
I've lost 3 hives in 5 years to bad management.
And how many hives have you had over those years?
I've had over 15.
Okay. But so you're saying the reason people lose hives is for what reason?
Bad management means I'm a new beekeeper.
What
so,
does that mean?
You know, learning. Okay. The learning process is one thing. You lose hives because... the queen, right now, the biggest loss is because the queen now is so weak that she can't maintain the hive. She stops laying, or she lays spotty eggs. She's got to lay thousands of eggs a day, and if she's not, you're going to lose that hive. It won't overwinter well. They won't have the numbers to keep warm. You lose hives because now climate change, the bees are very confused with the climate change because we're taking their honey when we need to leave it, because winter's lasting longer, or there are droughts.
We lose
hives because of neonicotides. We're losing hives, pollen from urbanization, from pesticides, herbicides.
Because I had friends that lost, I think, 4 hives. I mean, they had 8, and they lost 4 of them. Or something.
And that's not at all unusual. You can lose all of your hives. What I found... predators are also a big one. You can have wasp invasion. You can have bears.
No, I
what
think these
I have
bees,
found,
though, just
pardon me?
Didn't survive the winter or something like that.
In the United States, we take a bee count in the spring to find out how many hives overwintered successfully. Winter is the most stressful time for bees. It's not summer because they have to vibrate all winter long. Right. And so you take the bee count, and hives that might have made it through the summer but were weak hives due to disease, mites, pesticides, will die out in the winter. They can't maintain the hive heat, and they freeze to death or starve to death even when there's plenty of food in the hive. They don't have the strength to reach the food and feed themselves.
Why don't they have that strength?
Because of the environment or because they are genetically weakened now.
Oh, I see, I see.
However, one thing I've done, because people have told me, well, you live in the mountains, so your hives are special, they're isolated. Every year, I bring up swarms from the valley, meaning from agricultural zones, from urban zones, and I bring them up here and I mix them with my hives, so I call my bees mountain mutts, because I want to have mites and I want parasites and I want weakened bees, and I want to show that in the right zone, in the zone where they're naturally going towards higher levels of organizational coherency, they take care of themselves.
I see. So you actually capture wild bees and make...
I capture wild bees, but I also capture bees that have swarmed from other people's hives.
But what, isn't there, like, usually a battle if you bring new bees into an old hive? Isn't there, like...
I can either give them their own hive, or I can merge them with another hive, depending
so they're welcomed
on what
into
needs
a
to be
hive.
Done.
New
Pardon
bees
me?
Welcome. Hello?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I was just saying, if you introduce foreign bees into a hive that's happening, will they be accepted?
There are ways to do it. You can have two queens if you keep a barrier, if you keep a little fence between them so the queens can't cross through it. But also sometimes if you get a swarm in the early spring and the swarm is very small, on its own it's not going to make it. So basically you have to kill one queen to put those bees with another queen so that they all will survive.
How do you actually capture a swarm of bees?
A lot of times bees swarm and they form a very tight nucleus around the queen to keep her, and they'll form often in low levels on park swings or on low branches of trees or something like this. And you actually put a box under them, and you clip that branch or shake it, and they fall into your box, and you pretty much have the queen because she'll be in the center of that mass. You leave the box open at night so everyone, all the bees that were out looking for a new place to create a hive will go back to that box because at night they go back to the queen. And then the next morning, very early, you pick up that box and bring it up to your hives and put it into its own hive or merge it with another.
I see. Huh. How many bees are usually in a beehive?
If you've got a healthy hive and it's midsummer, you can have 60,000 to 80,000 bees.
Wow. And they're all out. They're not all out looking for honey, but...
No, they aren't.
But some of them are out there looking to pollinate.
The worker bees, all bees go through a... All bees do all jobs at different periods in their lives. And worker bees is the final stage for the bees in the hive. And they can live a life. They'll have maybe 2 weeks in the field, and that's about their extent.
What are bees actually doing? Okay, so they're going out to flowers and getting pollen. Is that it?
Pollen. They get nectar. They bring water back to the hive. They go to trees and get in the sap of the trees and bring that back to the hive to make propolis. They scout. They're scouting for different purposes. They are bees that are guard bees that protect the outside of the hive. They're bees that are wax bees. The young bees are the ones that make the comb. There are bees that are special winter bees. They're bigger than the regular bees so that they can last longer than a normal bee.
Actually, I have some questions from a bee enthusiast here. Should I ask you that? Because I think it's about what you're saying. And we'll go more into it. But this woman, Anne, says the flower of life patterns with hexagrams are like the hexagrams of the hives, right? Aren't they individual cells hexagrams? Mm-hmm. And thus the hive is one of the most harmonic forms, both in light and sound, on our planet. I think you said that.
Yes.
And the healing power, there's a healing power to these perfect hexagram shapes. They form
the healing power with the bee.
Yes.
Is these hexagrams are all packed in. It's one against another. They all share walls, and they're vibrating at many different levels. They're vibrating to earth frequency. They're vibrating to bee frequency. They're vibrating to a high light frequency. There are many. The vibration, it just is kind of like it keep going up and into the environment. Everything within the range of a hive is enriched and brought to higher levels of frequencies, coherency.
Right. Okay, I get that. And so this woman also asked about the sounds of the bees. Have you done like cymatic type experiments?
Well, yes, I have. John Reed in London is an acoustic engineer who's very well known in cymatics. And he told me that he's never gotten any shape, anything significant from the sound of the bees. And I asked him, I said, did you get the sound from inside the hive? And he goes, no, we got them from nature. And when I sent him a recording of the sound of the bees making comb, making the wax comb, that's when he got the cymoglyphs that I sent you.
I didn't realize that's what you sent me, the cymoglyphs.
I sent you four cymoglyphs.
Describe them to people listening.
The first cymoglyph is absolutely beautiful, and he said that's typical. It looks like the queen bee in the center of the glyph.
Oh, now I get what you sent me. Yes, you sent them these sounds, huh?
Yes, I sent them those sounds, and those sounds are clips, seconds, you know, fractions of a second of a clip.
Right.
And the first one, as I said, looks like the queen bee. The second one is the queen bee spreading, because in nature everything spins, and so that's the spinning of the bee. The third one is you start seeing towards the center lines appearing, geometric shape of lines. And what John said about that was that it would appear, if he had more time to do the clips, that it would form the shape of a hexagram, so that they're energetically forming this shape before it actually is made. And the last cymoglyph, the fourth one, is the cymoglyph of the energetic imprint of the bees vibrating their thoracic muscles.
So they make sounds with their thoracic muscles?
Yes. That's how they keep the hive warm during the winter, and that's also how they keep the hive warm. They have to keep the hive warm when they're making comb to keep it pliable so that it will take the shape that they're making. The CD that is that CD is called Creation CD, and what that is very good for is stem cells, regeneration.
So the sound of those particular bees doing that will help generate stem cells.
What happened was I took it to a workshop, an energy workshop, and had different people listen to it. And some of the women just burst out crying because it was so powerful. And they said, this is very, very deep. Well, last January, I had a bad fall skiing on my knee, and I was told that my kneecap was obviously very loose and a tendon was popping and I would need surgery. And I placed the headphones on my knee with the sound of the Creation CD going in it, and energy was just flying around. And in the end of May, I went back to the chiropractor and asked him to look at my knee, and he said, "It's perfectly fine. What did you do?" And I said, "Well, for four different sessions, I had the headphones on my knee, and that was it. And my knee's perfectly fine."
Wow. Well, just getting back to the bees again.
Yes.
So, I mean, lots of people use prefabricated hives, right?
Yes.
But the bees, the best thing is for the bee to make their own hive.
Well, that would be the best. But we do have, you know, all of nature is in, we all share. Everything is shared. And so that they are in hives, if we keep them in hives, then it's our responsibility as managers to make sure that they're having the best possible hive, like a lot of ventilation, space, healthy wood. You know, there are a lot of things that we need to do as beekeepers to manage them, to keep them, you know, to give them the best possible location.
Right. So, okay, so the bees then, I mean, just to go over basic bee understanding, they make honey, right?
Yes.
They make royal jelly. That's mostly for the queen.
Mm-hmm.
They make propolis. What is propolis?
Propolis is a very sticky, dark orangey substance that they use to line their hive with to protect it from weather and from outside invasion. Bees, if, for example, a wasp should get into the hive, bees will circle around that wasp, will sting the wasp, and then they'll start spewing propolis, and they actually embalm the wasp in propolis. Now, what we found, and it's an ancient use, is that when you use a little bit of alcohol with the propolis, it'll make it less sticky, and you can take it as a healing substance, that some people take a little bit of propolis every morning just to maintain their health.
Uh-huh. And the other thing that bees make is wax. They make...
Yes.
And is that what the hive is actually made out of, wax?
Yes, the hive is made out of wax.
How do the bees make wax from pollen? How does that happen?
Okay, what the bees do, the bees actually make it more from honey. They ingesting it. And what they do is they sweat wax in... slivers, like in platelets from mm-hmm. the sides of their body, and then they move it up their body and take it in their mandibles and start creating the cells.
And how do they make honey, bees?
The honey is made from the pollen. They ingest it, and then what they do is they will bring it into the hive. They will then mouth to mouth feed that pollen honey to another bee, and then that bee will go around and she will fill a cell up, and then she will have a secretion from her head, a gland in her head, that will cover the cell so that the honey won't ferment. And so it's pollen plus a bee secretion that what we know is honey.
Wait, so one bee goes out, gets pollen, and gives
honey,
it to...
Honey, nectar, I'm sorry.
They get nectar, not pollen.
Well, they get pollen also, but pollen is to feed the bees with. It's not to make honey.
Oh, so they get flower pollen, but they turn into bee pollen. Is that what happens?
Yes, yes.
But so another bee will get nectar from a flower, ingest that, but then... give it to a bee in the hive whose job is just to create honey? Or
that
draw
bee's
bees
job
to?
Then is to fill, yes. But that bee then will grow out of that job and go on to be another job. All the bees go through all the jobs.
Well, how many jobs are there for bees?
Okay, there's when a bee is born, it it starts cleaning the hive. It's kind of a cleaner, and it'll clean the cells because bees are very, very hygienic. It'll clean the cells. Then the next one would be nurse bees that they tend the
Wait, so how long will a bee, like, clean a cell for after it's born?
It might be a week.
Oh, only a week. Okay.
Bees last, a life of a bee is maybe 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
So they have to move pretty quickly through all those different jobs.
What about a queen? How long will a queen
live? A queen in nature used to last 7 years, and now the queens are so weak and or industrialized that people will replace the queen twice a year. They'll kill the queen and put a new queen in twice a year. Okay.
So do you have strong, healthy queens?
I have beautiful queens. I have absolutely beautiful queens.
Because why? What are you doing for your queen?
It's because of the energy field that they're in. And because also when you buy queens from packages, companies that put out big packages of bees, the queens are not related to the package, meaning in one place in this industry, they'll be making queens, and another place they'll have a bunch of bees, and they'll put a queen into a package, and she's not related to those bees. So my queens are all related to the bees they're with. My queens are pretty much made by the colony. They're from the colony, and they are very healthy because of the frequency zone they're in.
But there is a whole business in making queens, commercializing queens, trading.
Very big business.
Yeah, but that's, you're saying, creating very weak queens.
And probably last year, but this year, a lot of the talk in bee groups is about how weak the queen is. There are more hives that are collapsing because of a weak queen than because of colony collapse syndrome.
What's colony collapse syndrome?
Colony collapse was when, about 3 or 4 years ago, what you'd see that had gone on for some time, but it kind of peaked about 3 years ago. You'd have a perfectly healthy hive one day, and then you'd go out the next day, and all your bees would be gone, and there would be
gone,
no dead bees
just
around.
Or they'd be gone out of the hive? I mean,
they'd be gone. The hive would be empty, even though there's plenty of honey. And there might even be larvae in there, so the queen was laying, but the hive is empty.
So would the queen still be there, or did she leave too?
No, she's gone too. They're all gone, and they don't
know
where they
went. And where do they go, these bees, when they
Well, they don't know where they went, because usually when a hive, when bees leave a hive, they go close by, so you'll always see them. And
what happens?
Now they're saying they don't find them at all.
How much colony collapse was happening around the country or the world?
Colony collapse is one. The other thing now is really the weak queen. She's not laying eggs well. She just can't maintain the hive.
Well, that I understand, but what happened with colony collapse where one day the bees were all gone? They're there one day and gone the next. What happened?
Well, I will say from a metaphysical point of view, and from one experience I had was that I was taken to a very, very large cave underground. It was like a cathedral underground. And I was walking there, and then I was told to look up. And I looked up to the walls of the cave, and the bees were there. And I said, like, what are they doing here? There's nothing here for them. And I heard, bees are not just for pollination. And then I understood, you know how you kind of instantly understand the bigger picture? I knew the bees were going into another dimension, and where we're running around being so concerned about pollination, there's a whole spiritual level that the bees are here for us for, and they'll wait until we understand.
Well, what do you think that spiritual level is?
The spiritual level, bees teach us sharing.
Mm-hmm.
They teach us, well, most of all, I would say unbinding. we're at a time now where we can't function at an old third-dimensional brain of cause and effect, or we're not going to make it. And bees are guides to unbinding.
Well, my friend Anne writes, who's a bee person, she writes about the bee priestesses.
Yes.
You know, using rhythmic instruments, including the frame drum, to enhance a bioestatic experience to shift the quantum field.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, you might be saying that bees hold a frequency to the next quantum level of consciousness. Would you say that?
That would be a very nice way to say it.
So do you know about the,
They're offering us at this level is light information.
What do you mean?
I mean, what the bees, move. Grebennikov, a Russian scientist, said that bees fly, and he was an entomologist, the bees fly in an energy cell. And shell, I think he called it a shell. And their shell is light. They're flying in an energy-bound pocket.
I see.
And
so energetically, yes. Yes,
and when you have 800 or 80,000 bees together, they're bringing a field in that passes information. We call it, you know, science again is saying it's anti-gravity. Anti-gravity moves to lighter and lighter fields, and lighter fields are who we are. In a way, they're reminding us who we are.
Hello?
Yes.
But also, can you just go back to the basic life of a bee? So the bee is born. How is a bee born from a larva? Like, what happens? The queen produces a larva?
The queen produces an egg, and initially the egg is...
How does the queen produce an egg?
Okay, a queen flies maybe twice in her life. She flies as a virgin queen, and she has six orifices on her stomach, and she flies into a whirl and goes into this tunnel that's kind of like a tornado. She'll fly in this tornado of drones, and the drones will impregnate her, and so she can carry fertilized eggs in the many, many thousands. I mean, think of how if she's laying 3,000 eggs a day and she lives for 7 years, you know, do the math. At
well,
any
is she
rate,
impregnated
she
every
go,
day?
Pardon me?
Is she just impregnated once, or is she
no,
impregnated
she's impregnated over and over again. She has six vaginas, basically.
Okay.
And she's impregnated over and over again, and it is only
every
the healthiest
day.
Of the drones
every,
that can get to her.
Every so the drones are constantly impregnating the queen.
One drone, because one drone can only impregnate her one time. And then
What happens to the drone?
He dies.
After he impregnates the queen, he dies?
Yes.
Not a great career for a drone.
No, it's a short life. But he doesn't
but
live
his
to
job.
Tell about it.
What does he impregnate the queen with? Is it like sperm or what is it? Bee sperm.
Yep.
And that bee sperm will fertilize eggs that the queen has, you're saying?
Yes.
And the queen has this egg because she's fed royal jelly that produces her eggs?
She has the eggs, but she also has a different body. Her body's longer, and so she's equipped as an egg factory. That's about all she can do.
But the queen was, the queen was a regular bee at one point, wasn't
she? No, she was... As soon as she was in larva stage, for about 3 days in larva condition, is when they decide whether that egg is going to be a worker bee or whether it's going to be a queen bee.
So
and
that's
if it's going to be a queen bee, her entire life cycle inside as an egg is being fed royal jelly.
I see, and that's why she develops the longer body and the six vaginas.
Yeah, she's a different development, and they also create a different size cell for her once they decide that she's going to be a queen.
I see. So if you're not a queen, you're just a regular worker bee.
Yep.
And as a regular worker bee, you were saying that for the first week you clean the cell.
You clean the cells, and then you become a nurse bee, and you start feeding the larva as it grows. And then there are a certain number of bees that will attend to the queen. She's
let me get back to the larva. How long will larva grow after they come out of the, how long will that take?
If it's a drone, I don't quite remember. It's
like
a matter of
days?
A few weeks. The queen will be in there for like 2 weeks.
In where?
And the other bees are shorter.
But the
time.
Queen will be where for 2 weeks?
The queen will be in a cell incubating for 2 weeks. She's going through metamorphosis from, larva to bee.
But once the queen produces a larva, how long do larvas stay larvas?
They can stay up to 10 days.
I see. Okay, so getting back to the life of the worker bee, so you go from like a cleaner to a nurse, and then there's also some that attend the queen.
There are those that attend the queen, then there's those that clean the hive, then there's those that will go out and stand on the porch of a hive or the door of the hive, the front of the hive, as bee guards, and then their last cycle is to be the worker bee.
When do they become the drone?
You're born a drone. That is a different cell and different food. You're born a drone.
Oh you're born a drone and your only job
is 98% of a hive is female and the 2% is drone.
And those drones only exist to impregnate the female, the queen.
Yes.
They don't go and look for honey or anything like that.
They don't do anything like that and they don't have a stinger. And they're larger, and they can't even feed themselves. They follow the queen around and hope to get food from the nurse bees. And in the fall, right now, you can see all over the ground drone bees because they're kicked out of the hive because they don't want to be feeding bees that don't contribute to the work of the hive.
Wait, but I thought the drones are just there to impregnate the queen.
And, well, they make a lot of drones because... The drones do not impregnate their own queen. They will fly out to impregnate other queens. And so you need to have a certain amount of drones just for nature, for the whole process.
Wait, you're saying they're making drones but not for their own queen?
No, they won't. No, a drone will not mate with its own queen. That would be incest.
Really? So you need to have like a series of hives together to create... to keep them going.
Yeah.
I see. I didn't realize that. I thought they're making the drones for themselves. So when a drone from another hive flies into this hive, they
know
what to do.
They don't fly into the hive. What they do is the queen will let off a smell that says, it's time for me to fly. And so the drones will smell this smell, and the drones will go out to a drone area that somehow she's been informed about because she's never left the hive, but she will fly to this drone area, and the drones are swirling kind of like in a tornado. They're swirling in a circle. She will fly through that swirl, and the strongest drones will fly into her, mate with her, and then drop dead.
I see. And she, how many times does that happen to the queen in one?
Depends on how many drones there are, how strong the queen is, and how strong the drones are.
So, like,
because
that could happen
like
100 times?
Because she can actually come back to the hive and lay very few eggs because she just didn't get impregnated.
But she only does that twice in her lifetime?
She does it once in her life for getting impregnated, and then she might fly a second time if... it is to leave the hive and start another hive.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, that's interesting. I didn't realize there was so much to bees. Now, someone else asks, are you familiar with the ancient Indian healing chant of the Bahrama bee chant?
The Bahrama? I'm not familiar with the chant, but I'm familiar with the Bahrama. And
what is
she
that?
She is the Hindu goddess, the Hindu bee goddess. And the interesting thing, again, like universally so, she will become a bee when this time is necessary for her to be a bee. And that's, again, joining with the bee spirit. And she does that to ward off demons and to purify the land and to anoint and strengthen and heal. Purifying the land is very interesting because it shows that the ancient people knew that the frequencies that radiated from the hives brought coherency into that range.
Right. No, that's good. Okay, the same person says, the ancient bee priestesses in several traditions biomimic both the buzz and the spiral waggle dance of the bee to enter a higher harmonic dimension based on the sacred geometry of the hive. Is this a sort of quantum bridge to the healing harmonics for our true health?
Yes, but with what I've brought together, you don't need that, and you don't need to get stung with bee venom. I mean, they have these rituals around it, I think what's happening in this lifetime that we're chose to come into is things have been sped up and we're expedited.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go through those rituals. They've done it for us. It's the knowledge now. Do you understand? We don't need the form. We need the light.
Right. I see. So what should we do?
What is possible? I mean, with these very simple tools that I put together, the only contribution I made in this that was possibly mine were the CDs. The tools were made by Bill, and...
Well, what kind of tools are they? Can you talk about that?
The tool that I'm using, and it's kind of, although it's good for anything, Bill and I talked about it because the very best tool is a harmonizer.
A harmonizer, what is that, one of Slim's tools?
A harmonizer. Well, Slim and Bill did this together. So a harmonizer is an orb with three full rings on it that are proportionate to sacred cubics, which are the Egyptian measures. And so they're drawing in earth energy and then sending it through a geometric sacred shape that then brings into coherency the field around it. The harmonizer costs like $330, and it will go out, the smallest one will go out 15 miles. And that would be the optimum. But that's too expensive for some people, and so what Bill came up with was a single ring of twisted copper that has a cross through it that are four, so it makes four rays out the sides, and that creates a harmonic field. So what it's doing actually is we used to call it, it was creating a field with photons or with phonons, and now we know it's gravitons, which are anti-gravity energy fields that they create. And then when you couple that, if you clip onto that a BCD, you do not need to play it. It doesn't have to be audible because the swirl created within the ring, because the ring is twisted, is a tensor field. It swirls, creating a spinning in there, and it shoots it out of, you know, it spins and spreads outward, and then it carries the acoustic patterning of the B sound is piggybacked on the waves that are being sent from the tool.
I understand. Okay, let me ask you another question about the Sufis created the spiral dance based on the bees. Do you know about that?
Oh, I would say everything in nature spins.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, even our atoms, our cells spin.
Right.
And all religions have spinning dances.
Uh-huh.
The bees don't spin as fast as the priestesses do. So I think that's nature spins, because when you spin, you create electromagnetic energy and you're creating a field.
Huh. Do you know about the ancient sacred sexual bee priestesses and Simon Buffett's?
I do know. I did read his information, and I think that's interesting, but I think this is really what I want to say. We don't have to go backwards. We need to go forwards. It's not about reproducing what they did.
Right.
It's about moving
that
forward. It's about efficiency. It's about light information. It's not about form anymore. Form is third dimension. That's structure. We don't need the structure. We need the unbounded mind.
Uh-huh. Okay, what about Rudolf Steiner's? Have you read his
writing? Yes, I know about Steiner's work. Steiner had an incredible intuitive gift. He was a very spiritual man and very devoted to nature.
Yeah.
And so he could see, how do you say it? He could see that how nature interacted and was in sync. How do you see, you know, just,
he
could see the one
like
piece,
the
he could see the unity of nature.
The subtleties of nature, the subtle frequency. I don't know how he figured that out, but, you know, his biodynamic intensive farmings of burying things in the ground for a year in order to make it potent. I don't know how he figured that out. That's pretty amazing.
I think that when you quiet your mind, you receive. See, if we assume that we are first spiritual beings, that means we're first light, and light's the information field. And when you return to that field, when you awaken to that field, or even touch in it every once in a while, let's just say, you get information.
Right. I mean, he did say, though, Steiner said that Melchizedek brought bees to the earth from the planet Venus. I mean, what do you think about that?
You know, it's funny. There's a woman who has my CDs who's a very, very gifted healer, and she sees and receives information. And she told me, she called me one day very ecstatically and said, I just heard that bees are from Venus. And I said, Bonnie, that's wonderful. I mean, I was very excited. My thing is, I don't repeat things that I don't have first knowledge of, because I want to know. But I do know Bonnie, and I know that what she says is yes.
Well, in a way, it doesn't matter. The fact is
exactly
that the bees, though, seem like an evolutionary leap, and they also seem like a model. I don't know about the drone and the queen stuff, but but most of their cooperative functionality seems like a model for our civilization, perhaps.
Well, the one thing that's interesting is you mentioned, evolutionary. Bees have not evolved in 200 million years. I think.
But where did they come from? I mean, where they evolved from, though?
They have traced the bees back through fossils, mostly not so much fossils because they're soft, but in amber, cotton amber. And they found bees 200 million years old that are still looking just like bees. Because what I think is when they're dealing with a super organism, it doesn't, the singular bee is not what's evolving. It's in a superorganism, it's not about the bee.
But this is the superorganism evolving? Are they? Or
I don't
they,
think it is. I think that it is a perfection. I think there is perfection.
Or are the bees here as a sort of catalyst of frequency to evolve human beings in the sense that they're not evolving, but they're...
Okay, I think that's where you got it, because they have, in the Mayan tradition... bees led the man out of one cataclysm into the new world. They're always leading us into new worlds, and they're always there to receive us. And so it seems like they've always, well, they were around 100 million years before man, so it's not just about us. I think it's just like Bahramari says, it's about purifying the land. They're stewards of the land and stewards of the heavens.
And maybe stewards of the human biofrequency itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're here to help us evolve. I mean, who knows? I'm just making that up, but possibly.
I think so. I think they're, because I'll tell you, the thing that I find humorous almost, my background, I have a PhD in psychology with emphasis in Carl Jung, mm-hmm. and I had a practice, I was doing my thing, and I was as much concerned about bees as I was about whales, as I was, you know, I had no relationship to bees. Uh-huh. I never thought about being a beekeeper. I just wanted to sign all the petitions that came my way that said bees are dying and protect the bees. And then all of a sudden, I got, I would have to say, taken over by the bees. And
how'd that happen? Why did that
happen?
It happened,
my sister, in the fall, in December of 2008, asked me if I wanted to go to a nearby town to see a reenactment of Christmas, and I wasn't interested. And then I felt bad because I hadn't done anything with her lately, and I said, sure, I'll go. I went there, and I saw they had some beehives there, and I said, is this simple? And they said, yes, and I said, I'll do it. So I went home, and I got into a class. I never do things that way. I research everything to death.
Right.
And then the next thing is I was on a plane to Hawaii, and I had no idea what was going on. And they have taught me quite dramatically that I have to live now and listen to them.
The bees. Okay.
And
well,
when I've tried to do other things, it's a miserable failure.
What is you're saying?
When I have decided that I want to do something else.
Oh, I see.
Couldn't be worse.
I get that. All right. But I also want to get back to the evolution and the bees a little bit because ants seem very similar in their hive mentality and the way they work and the queen. What is the difference? I mean, no, they're different creatures, but what is the difference between the two superorganisms?
I would think, now just a sec, I would say bees, the difference is bees are the ever-ready battery. They don't stop giving.
Well, do ants?
I really can't say it. They're so distinct. The bees are the highest level of colony organization.
Ant colonies, though?
No, ant colonies are not as high as level as a bee.
What do you mean? How do you judge a higher level of organization?
It's because of all the jobs that are... Just just totally physiologically, just biology, bees are more differentiated than ants.
Could, I mean, there's a relationship. I mean, they're insects, right? I mean, would you say possibly that bees evolved from ants? I mean, I don't know. But
there's no point in me saying that because I would just be guessing.
Right. But there is a relationship somehow, just in the way things are set up in colonies and queens. I mean, there's some kind of...
I get what you're saying. There's a lineage there.
Yes,
that would appear to
there's
be shared.
Evolution, possibly. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. But are there other creatures or insects that operate in a sort of hive mentality with queens?
Ladybugs, wasps.
Ladybugs, too.
Ladybugs, wasps, termites.
Oh, wasps, of course. But termites. I see. So there's probably a relationship among all these types of insects that do these, have these similar.
Yeah.
But you would say that bees are the most sophisticated and highly and most evolved out of all those
yes.
types of creatures.
Yes.
And is the bumblebee more evolved than the honeybee, or what's
the bumblebee is a solitary bee, and so just
what
in
does that mean?
It being solitary, it would indicate that it doesn't. It's not a superorganism, because you can't compare a bumblebee with a honeybee, because the bumblebee does not live for the organism. The bumblebee lives for itself.
Oh, I see. I see. But it comes out of a hive. It just doesn't go
the
back.
The bumblebee comes out of the hive in the ground, and it's a solitary hive.
Now, are wasps superorganisms?
They're not considered superorganisms, but they all depend on the queen, and they are... They're very close. They're better pollinators than the honeybee.
But they don't have honey.
You know what they don't have? They don't have the communication system. And that's, again, dependent upon frequency level.
But do they make propolis and honey and
no.
pollen?
No. They don't.
So there's something really unique, the fact that the honeybee, makes these products that humans can use and benefit from.
Every single organism, from plant to human, benefits from the bees.
Really?
And there's not one thing that the bee doesn't produce that isn't of use to us. Their hive, the wax, the propolis, the royal jelly, the bee bread, the honey, their buzz, everything about the bee benefits everything in their environment.
Why do they have a stinger? Why do they sting?
This is very interesting, because only 2% of the world's population is actually deathly affected by a bee sting.
Right.
And yet people say, you say bees and they go sting. I think that's an archetypal thought, because bee comes to our mind because we are so related to the bee. Sting is wasp. Wasps are aggressive. Bees that are out pollinating will not sting you. You can stick your hand in a bush of bees that are out doing their job, and they will not sting you. If you step on a bee or swat at a bee or go into the zone of a hive and they feel you're threatening, they will sting you.
So they are very sensitive to human vibration, bees.
They're very aware of us. A bee, a wasp can sting several times. If a bee stings once, it dies, because the stinger is connected to their stomach, and as they withdraw the stinger, it rips out their stomach.
Uh-huh.
So they're not intended to sting. However, their sting, of course, is a healing factor for us also.
Right. There's a healing, I guess, venom that comes for lots of people with certain conditions from the bee sting.
Yeah.
But why do bees have a stinger? Is there a certain reason in their normal...
Well, they need to protect their hive. And when other insects get into their hive, or even mice get into their hive, their sting, they will all come together and sting it to death.
Oh, so mice or another animal would get into and try to steal the honey.
Yeah, or eat the bees. People think that bears go to hives to eat the honey. They go to hives to eat the bees because of the protein.
Wait, so why aren't humans who take the honey stung by the bees?
Oh, they can be. They can be miserably stung, and they can, I mean, that's why we have all our little uniforms we wear.
But why is that honey allowed to be taken?
I think it's, again, the role of the bee in society, or, you know, in the universe, it gives. And, I mean, all, I'll say this, and I this really struck me, because this is, you know, in the Bible, when food is always a very important, in all religions, food is shared. But it says here, you know, at the Last Supper, he took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and shared it.
Yeah.
That is all of life.
Right.
If we would remember to thank life, we would be a happier society. Because when life... Now, can I go into one other thing here?
Yes, of course. This is
okay.
Very interesting. Yes.
One of the things that I found, you might recall Clive Baxter.
Yes, the guy who talked to plants and measured the response
yes.
of plants.
Okay.
Yes, very important work.
It's very important work, but what recently a woman, I read about her in the newspaper, she has a device that will allow you to hear the plants sing. And
right.
this device is a clip that clips onto the leaf of a plant that then feeds into a biofeedback machine. The energy of the plant goes to the biofeedback machine, and it goes into a synthesizer. In the synthesizer, there are 150 musical patterns that is then hooked to speakers. And she said that it took her 6 months to find one plant that would go through into the synthesizer and start singing. And I invited her to come up to my bee garden, and I said, and so how she gets other plants to sing is she entrains them. They listen to her one singing plant, and then the plant will sing. Otherwise, it won't.
Oh.
But now, I said, I want you to put the clamp on one of my plants in my bee garden without entrainment and see if the plant sings. And she was floored because my plant started singing instantaneously. And then, not only did my plant sing instantaneously, but within the range of the pattern that the plant chooses, it will go up and down the scale to find where it will set in the range of that pattern. When she did my plants in the bee gardens, they were very complex sounds. And that's why I keep using the word unbound, because the greater the complexity, the greater the diversity and the unbinding of everything within the environment. And so what we talked about was it's the zone, the bees teach the plants to sing.
The bees, so without bees, these plants would not make sounds?
Well, because one thing we did, we went to one plant that was not anywhere near the bees at a different person's property. And the plant to sing had to be entrained. Then we went to a friend's house who had some beehives but does not have my tools. And the plants sung spontaneously. Then we came up here to my bee garden. The plants sang spontaneously but with greater complexity.
Uh-huh. Well, it's amazing your research into plants. I mean, into bees, I mean, the whole vibration.
Well, it's the whole thing. And what I suspect, now why I brought up Cleve's work is because he went so far as to show how plants were And entities, you know, like he did an egg. He did all sorts of live entities, and he showed how they responded in our environment to environmental stimulus. For example, if I just thought the words in my head in front of a plant and said, I am going to eat you, the plant, if it's hooked up to the lie detector, started, you know, screaming, basically.
Right. I've heard those experiments.
Okay.
That Steve did.
Now, what we're going to do tomorrow in this work, Teresa and I, my theory is if you go to a plant and say, I'm going to eat you, it will scream. Well, what does that say to us about everything we're putting in our mouth?
Well, what does it say? Aren't they
it
here
says
to
it's
help
screaming.
Us?
If we crack an egg, even an unfertilized egg, the egg has the thought of being fertilized. That was part of his work that he showed. The egg gives off an energy field as if it had a live entity within it, even if it's unfertilized.
Who are you talking about?
Clive.
Oh, Clive.
Cleve Baxter.
Cleve Baxter talked about eggs as well,
yes.
You're saying?
Yes. So anything we put into our mouth is not a happy situation.
Wait, so you're saying plants do not want to be eaten?
Plants do not want to be eaten.
Okay.
Eggs do not want to be eaten. So what is that saying to our universe if we're eating these things that they're taking into our system that are crying? So what I thought is we could get a plant to register if we said, I'm going to eat you. Then basically the plant's going to cry out. But then what if we said to the plant, you are the perfect child of God or creation of God, and I thank you for offering yourself for my nourishment. At that moment, I suspect that plant will reach a state of self-realization and offer its body for us to eat at its highest frequency level.
How do you know? Have you done that?
We're going to do it tomorrow. But
what's happened? Tomorrow you're doing what?
We're going to do that experiment tomorrow.
With Cleve Baxter's
We're going to do it with Teresa's musical instrument, her musical setup with biofeedback. Because if, for example, in that one incident where Jesus says, and he took the bread, and then he gave thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given to you. Do this in remembrance of me. Because we are not bodies, and neither are plants. Plants are spirit in origin, right?
Right.
And so if they get their origin, if we acknowledge the plant at its spiritual level, then it can leave the body and go into the light field.
Mm. So, okay, I don't know, but what do you think bees are?
Bees are light bodies too.
Okay.
Bees are light bodies. And, you know, if I can refer back to this, if you recall where I sent you Lenny things, and it was today, so I sent you the EEG of my brain.
Yes.
Okay. I sent you the before, and then I sent you during the BCD experience.
Oh, okay. Can you tell me about the...
Okay. What happened was, the moment I listened, you know, I had the skull cap on of the EEG. Then I put the earphones on of the spring CD, and instantaneously I went into mind expansion. I say that because it's not like a trip. You know what I mean? It's mind expansion. And I would like, if I may, just to read you what happened in that experience. Is that all
yes.
right?
Yes. And then we'll wrap up. But yeah, tell me that. Yes, please.
Okay. I became immediately aware of three distinct channels, a central corridor and two peripheral corridors. In the central corridor, I was directly in the channel of the essential B current. It was absolutely smooth, no pinging nor silence, no differentiation of sound other than the B essence. From the two peripheral corridors, one was distinctly left, the other distinctly right, I could hear, as if at a distance, the bees as pinging around in a hive as you hear them on the CD. However, the sounds never merged or interfered with the other corridors. I saw the bees in great detail and color and heard them buzzing directly in front of my eyes. I saw them in front of my eyes. They were big. I was seeing, experiencing two distinct dimensions. In the first, I saw the bees, wherein I felt I was present with them. It was as if I was in the hive with the bees. Maybe I was a bee. It was not in a dark hive, but one full of light. In the second, beyond the bees, as if I was looking out of a window, but I couldn't go beyond the hive that I was in. I saw a flow of crystalline gold white light surrounding, but also emanating from a feminine figure. She was extraordinary in light and grace, slow movement, not leaving the center of my observation field. I am thinking she was in a meadow surrounded by pine trees. I said, "That's me." The feminine image is an extension of myself. I heard, "No, it isn't." I knew I wanted to join her. I wanted to push the bees around me aside. I heard, "They are your attendants." I had to exert quite a force, intense focus to join her. And instantly, I was there. I saw and experienced myself as a smaller version and with incredible energy. I was twirling and spinning around. I was a light of swirling cone-like energy with a human-like body. I, too, was bathed in white light, but not as she was. I said, "I want to slow down now," and I heard, "Not here." I understood that to mean I was in a space where it wasn't an I was not a controlling agent. The visionary experience lasted a while, but to keep it clear, I had to focus with great intent. At some point, the feminine figure disappeared. Then to the left of me, the field became black and a force was trying to wash over me like black ink. I kept noticing the force was very strong, and at times it was partially blackened out my light. I was not afraid or angry. It felt simply like I had to keep pushing against it to hold it back, or it would overwhelm me, blot me out. Eventually, I realized that I couldn't change the situation. I didn't have the strength to keep the black away. I felt myself relax. A white, light horse appeared. I merged on his back, and we flew straight into a field of light. That's the experience. What the EEG shows...
But that's the experience of what? What is that?
That was my experience listening to the green spring CD while I had the EEG cap on.
Okay. Okay, I get it.
And what the EEG captured in one of its graphs was a round circle with 10, with like 20 dots in it. Every single dot is connected except for one. And I know if that one dot had been connected, I would have gone on into white light, but they kicked me back because I had some more work to do.
So what does that experience have to do with the bees?
The bees, if you know that bees are intermediaries, and I was listening to the Bee Spring CD, then you notice that as intermediaries, they were at the initial part of my experience. Mm-hmm. They were where I started from. They woke me up to move on, and I did.
So do you think that everyone should have keep bees? Is there enough flowers?
You don't
to
need to have beehives. We don't need structure. We don't need form. We need the frequency field with the coherency that will entrain us.
So we just need to play the CDs that have the frequency.
The CDs
field.
With a tool that will bring coherency. It's the. This is what in your interview with Mark.
Newkirk. Newkirk. That's on YouTube. Yes.
He gave me some insight. I appreciated listening to that. I appreciated that interview because he said that it was the bringing together of three elements, a light field, sacred geometry, and acoustic patterning. Then he built an artificial hive, actually, that could bring people into high level of coherence. Well, the tool creates the light field. The sacred geometry is captured on the BCD. The sound of the bees is the acoustic patterning.
Uh-huh. So tell people how to order these CDs. How can they reach you?
I have my website at healingbees.org, and there's a product list there. The tool, the copper tool, is made individually by people that needs to be ordered. It's made by jewelers that have been taught how to do this by Slim and can be bought on the website. These tools, this one tool called the Starburst that I use with the bees, can be used anywhere for anything. It is not only for bees, and it is not on Slim's site because this was created after Slim had passed.
I see. So what's the website again?
The website is healingbees.org.
And that's your personal website?
That's my website. It has my book, the CDs, and the Starburst.
The book is called what?
The book is called The Beehive Effect, Ancient Rites, Quantum Principles.
It's amazing the education you just gave me and probably most people are listening about bees. I had no idea how, well, sophisticated they were and also how spiritually advanced they are and how important they are for our evolution and just our maintenance and our history. So,
well, I'll tell you also, Alan, that your gift of what you do is also the gift that you brought to the bees to give them voice to a larger audience. And yeah. I humbly thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So just as far as the future and what we should do, what do you recommend? What wisdom from the bees can you give us? And what do you recommend for the planet?
I recommend very strongly to get out of the mentality that the bees are dying. Get out of the mentality of having to fight against somebody. We don't have to fight because when we fight Monsanto, when we fight Bayer companies, when we fight, we're creating aggression. The bees are not that way. Those entities that appear to be non-beneficial will implode. We need to go to light. It is only love, forgiveness, and light that is going to change the world and is going to change us. And we can do this.
But
we
Monsanto is disgusting, and they're owning life itself, and they do seem like the evil empire. I guess they will implode. I mean, I guess they will.
They will implode.
Yeah, I mean.
But the thing is, we can either create light, we can either participate in the creation of light in a unified universe, like a secret superorganism, or we can create separation and dissension. Where do you want to put your energy? I know where you're putting yours.
Right. I agree. I do think, though, that GMOs are hurting people, and these corporations don't seem to care.
You know what, though? We change them with our love. Our frequencies are higher than theirs. When we join together.
Right. And if we come into a more coherent field, the less incoherent or the less
absolutely
together frequencies dissolve into a
higher
coherence. Yeah.
And they will dissolve on time.
Maybe we should just broadcast the beast. Can you play a little bee thing?
You know what? I have it set up for that, and I appreciate that. This is the spring CD.
Okay.
And
how long should we listen to? I'm going to go into a little
as
meditation.
Long as you like.
No, just give us a few minutes,
I'll put the speakerphone up to it now. Can you hear this?
Are those bees?
Are you hearing that? Should I just leave this?
Yeah,
you
it sounds like static, but I'm hearing it.
I have to turn it down because I can't. Pardon me?
It sounded like static. It didn't sound like bees, but maybe that's what it sounds like. I mean, what's it supposed to? Is it like a buzzing or what?
This
are we
is
hearing?
A spring CD, and in the spring CD, it's 100% female. It's 100% potential. They're cleaning the hive. They're preparing the hive. They're waking up from the winter. They're bringing in water. The queen is laying eggs like crazy, and it's 100% vitality. Here it is again.
Okay.
Okay, now I'll turn it down a bit so I can hear you.
No, play it a little longer just so I can get into the frequency a little bit.
Okay, I'll do that. Do you want some more?
No, I think I got it. It sort of sounds like traffic on a highway with trucks going by.
It also sounds like running water. I mean, the thing is, it's not the sound, it's the frequency.
Okay, because the sound
the sound doesn't even have to be pleasing. You can turn this down so it's barely on, and the frequency is as strong as if it's full blast. You don't need to be blasted by it.
Well, thank you, Valerie. Valerie, that's...
Thank you, Alan.
So by playing those CDs, though, will it increase our coherent frequencies?
That's entrainment. The way I suggest doing it, the way I did it, because I'm lazy, is I put it in my car. Because when I got in my car, then it was buzzing. You know, you put it in the CD player, because you're up and down around the house and doing things and out. But when I had it in the car, I was always listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you. So your website again is?
Healingbees.org.
Thank you, Valerie. So I'll post this on the website. This will also be on BBS Radio, and you can link to it and use
thank
this
you.
Interview for your own purposes.
I'd also like to get back to you with the plant songs with the bees.
Okay. We'll do maybe a show about that, plant songs.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You can actually hear the plants sing.
Oh, yeah. Are we on air?
Yes.
Okay, because I've got a plant song right here. It's the aspen tree in my garden.
How long is the plant song?
It's 3 minutes.
Well, can you play just a little bit? Because
I
do
will.
Have some other things to do. But
just a sec. Let me.
This is the aspen song. So
okay,
there's
I'm
little.
Put it up.
Clips hooked up to the plant.
Okay, this is the aspen tree.
Okay.
Let me turn the sound up. It's playing organ music. It chose church music to sing.
We had to sweep this branch over so it could reach the equipment because the leaves were too high. So we've got the equipment up here, and then we've got the branch.
That's an aspen tree in my bee garden.
Wow. Well, let's do a whole show about that sometime.
That's powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing. I did hear that someone from Domenhor, Italy, was sharing something.
That's where this instrument came from.
Right.
Came
I
from
met
Italy.
The person sharing that technology on different plants. And didn't work on every plant, but when it did
work,
it
works
was
on every plant up here.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Well, thanks, Valerie. I'll be in touch. Thanks for, you know, reaching out to me.
And thank you, Alan. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Say hello to Katarina.
I will.
And you're in Colorado. Where are you?
I'm in Boulder, Colorado with the floods.
Oh. Oh, how's it going out there? What's happening with the floods? Is it serious? Or
It's pretty serious. In my area, it's just roads because we're at the top of the mountain, so all the roads got eaten up. And our trip to town is 15 minutes, but now it's over an hour because we have to go through a different canyon. But people down in Boulder and in the valley are very serious.
So Boulder's being flooded out, is that it?
Yeah, Boulder's got a lot of flood damage, but a little town, Lyons, is gone,
Lyons.
Basically, totally destroyed.
Lyons was flooded?
Yeah, it had the big Thompson River coming down from Estes Park, and it went through town, and the house has just collapsed.
Really, my cousin used to live in Lyons. He's not there now, but I've been to Lyons. So, anyway, thanks. Thanks for everything, and I'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you so much. Good night.
Good night. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. That was Valerie Solham and her amazing knowledge of bees and their connection to our human transformation. So, I don't know if you have any comments or questions or ideas about that program. You can email me at a@newrealities.com and also check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.